Just I guess maybe a quick update and what's going on is in order. We do have some guests that don't know everything that goes on here, but Olivia Bishop Watts in the hospital. So he's spending all his time there, so he just has to to take care of her and provide her with the minute by minute care that she sometimes needs. So we ask and covet your prayers for Olivia that the test would all keep coming back good and she'd find out exactly what's causing the problems and how to handle the best of all the things. It looks like she possibly could come home this weekend, but maybe not. That puts a real burden. So, anyway, we're having to fill double duties here sometimes, and you get stuck with me tonight rather than Bishop Jones. And trust me, I'm not a Bishop Jones teaching or anything else. Roxanne said that they were going to be getting out early next door, so we may try to meet them. And but I thought I was, I didn't think I was sharing tonight until today. Father Craig was here tonight. But due to extending the weather circumstances with him, which is, he jumped on me, I think, this could be. I should have heard that bus coming earlier in the week, and I didn't. So, anyway, and I'm not a speaker. I'm not like Bishop or regular pastor. I can do like once in a while. It's fun. So usually, sometimes I have a good word. But this will be my fifth time this week. I speak, thank you, Jesus, at the other times were short times. But there were still times. So I don't really know that I've got anything to say. Ron, would you pray for me tonight? That's one of the things I share with you a little bit about my life. I try to tie it in with what I'm going to share. I actually shared some of this morning with the children at our chapel. If you're here, you go like, wow, that's worse than this one. But I was a young Christian in my 20s or very early 20s, and I was involved in the ministry, and we had three Bible study type things a day, and then a meeting at night. Because this was in the ministry of kind of a halfway house type thing, like Jimmy Hale from Birmingham. You know, we dealt with alcoholics, and back then we didn't really call them drug addicts. Maybe I should say we didn't call ourselves drug addicts. We were just hippies that had found Jesus. So we had all these times. I had to speak a lot then, and plus then on Sundays, most of the time we would be invited to speak at a church about what God was doing with young people and stuff like that, so a lot of times I had to do that too. And I realized early on that I was not a gifted preacher or speaker, regardless of what prophetic words I got about that. So I came to a real place with the Lord, and it was the end for me. And I told the Lord, I said, Lord, I'm done. Because I'm terrible. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. And you don't even have a clue what you said. You can clue up there that nobody else could die. And that was kind of where I was at. Because I was a recovering hippie myself, you know. So I'd spent, you know, the last 4 years, kind of previously, or 5 years, maybe pretty much stoned every day. Weekends were, you know, like, I just was stoned every day. And weekends was like for a party time, so I did other was a difficult time. So I just got really frustrated with it all, and I just told the Lord, I'm not speaking anymore. That's just not my thing. I love doing the cooking and chasing people around in circles and trying to make sure nobody was breaking the rules. But we had, no tolerance policies that we dealt with. So he's always having to kind of keep an eye on me. I enjoyed all those different things. I enjoyed sometimes the small little thinking of Bible studies, but I didn't enjoy the speaking of that kind of stuff. Also, I would say it was so bad. And so I had like one more time that I was kind of on schedule to do it inside of church. And so I went to the church, just reading it, hating the whole idea of it. You know, I did the best I could to put together, and I read the books, how to go through the concern, answer the question. I read all that stuff and never did that. So I go to this church and I'm speaking, and it's of all things, it's a Presbyterian church. A small Presbyterian church. That's the worst place in the world to speak, is Presbyterian church. Because they have such a high, Presbyterian pastors are like forced to go into continuing education. They can't just go to seminary and not a seminary. They got to keep going. If they're in a big Presbyterian church, they're going to wind up with their doctors of divinity degrees, along with their doctor of philosophy and stuff like that. So, that's not the best place for someone who's not a good speaker to speak. They used to live at that. So anyway, I went and I spoke, and then, did the typical thing. We don't do that so much here, but, like in the old days, this was in the early 70s, if you did something, you'd wait at the back door and shake hands until people would tell you, it all lies, like, good job. And every once in a while, somebody would go, "Oh, that was terrible." Well, I got somebody's eyes. But you shook everybody's hand, and so that was just part of the deal. So I was back at the back door, and people were coming by, and they started telling me about my message and how much it meant to me. And I'm going like, "Well, you guys are listening to a recording?" Because I had no clue what they were talking about. They had heard something totally different than what I thought I had spoken. And so that's the only reason I can even do something like this. Because, I trust that God will give you ears to hear what He says. And I just hope that it gives you ears and not your eyes. Because it's, I'm kind of just a plain Jane kind of guy. But that was a real challenge. That was a real turning point in my life. It was a point in my life of really, really realizing the sufficiency of Christ in our situation. And that you didn't have to have a doctor of divinity. You didn't have to be the smartest guy in the world. But you didn't have to do anything. And if God could take the jumbled up mess that I had delivered that day, I guess it was a jumbled up mess. Nobody heard what I said, apparently, because everything they told me that they heard was so different. I felt like, man, I need to get my notes out because this doesn't sound like anything that I was trying to say. It slowly dawned on me that I was getting different stories of what people thought of me. And then after I processed all that, on my drive home, the Lord began to speak to me. He goes, I've never asked you to be broke. In fact, I don't even ask you to be broke. I just ask you to just give me what you got. Just give me what you got. And I can do the rest. But if you don't give it to me, then I can't do it. And so because of that, even sometimes like tonight I feel very ill-prepared perhaps, I have that confidence in God that He wants to speak to somebody or everybody in this room. And I really believe that if I heard from the Holy Spirit, that I could stand up here and say nothing and He'd still hear what He wants to say. My job is just to give to Him the little bit that I've got and let Him work with that. This is the story that I have. The reading for today, in those of y'all who are not familiar with us, we have what's called a lectionary, which gives us a series of readings for every day, week, all year long. And we kind of follow that along with our readings. So our gospel reading today was from Matthew, the 15th chapter, beginning in the 29th verse, continuing to the end of the 39th verse. So I'll read this. Departing from there, Jesus went along by the sea. And also, I'd like for you to just read this way. As I'm reading it, listen to it and read it this way. Because the only thing that got me through school was I was taught to read. The way I was taught to read was to become the character. Not to just read it as mere words. But to become a part of the story. Enter into what the author was saying. That's the only way I got through English classes, because I had English teachers, I think they just really couldn't stand the idea of having to do another year. So they gave me great grace to let me do like multiple book reports to try to keep them ready and get it out of their hair. And so I learned to read, and reading was always a very passionate problem. And here was a young person, but it was a place where I felt recognized. Because I had learned to read and entered the story that I read. I never didn't read about stuff as abstract. You know what I'm saying? What I read was not out there. What I read was in here. So I tried to enter into it. And the better authors, really, that's what they do to you, is they capture you when you read. I don't know about y'all, but I've lost more sleep in my life than I read because the story captured me. You know, and I'm going like, well, I got to get to work. So I need to stop reading. Well, I'm going to read one more chapter now. And so it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm confident. This is not going to be good tomorrow, 7 o'clock when I show up at work. I'm like that, for sure. But it had so captured entering into the story. So try to listen to these words, read these words as if you're there, as if you're one of the apostles, if you're one of the guys, you're one of the people maybe that's been following around. Whichever character is taught, this may be very foreign to you, but he was shy. Departing from there, and this is, Jesus always seemed like this departing from there. So most of the time in the Gospels, he departs from there. He always goes somewhere. So departing from there, Jesus went along by the Sea of Galilee, and having gone up on the mountain, he was sitting there. And a large crowd came to him, bringing with them those who were lame, crippled, blind, mute, and many others. And they laid them down at his feet, and he healed them. So the crowd marveled as they saw the mute speaking, the crippled restored, and the lame walking, and the blind seeing, and they glorified the God of Israel. Then Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I feel compassion for the people, because they have remained with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. I do not want to send them away hungry, for they might faint on the way. The disciples said to him, where would we get so many loaves in this desolate place to satisfy such a large crowd? Then Jesus said to them, how many loaves do you have? And they said, 7 and a few small fish. He directed the people to sit down on the ground. He took the 7 loaves and the fish, and giving thanks, he broke them and started giving them to the disciples. And the disciples gave them to the people. And they all ate and were satisfied. And they picked up what was left over, the broken pieces, 7 large baskets. And those who ate were 4,000 men, besides women and children. And sending away the crowds, Jesus got into the boat and came again to the region of Galilee. That's an amazing story. All by itself. It's an amazing story. For so many different reasons. So here you are, and Jesus has come to this place, and he's gone up on a mountain. It's a desolate place. He sits down, and people have been following him, and so they're starting to catch up. You know, people who walk me. They're like driving cars. And Jesus sometimes took boats and spots of them, but he'd rather go ahead. So here's Jesus sitting, and all these people come up. I don't know how many of y'all have been involved in praying for the sick. We go somewhere, I travel with the bishop a lot, and we'll do these things, conferences, where we have a time when we pray for the sick. We was at this one little conference in Georgia. It was a little small thing. It was a beautiful church, but the congregation was like really, really small. And so we had these, congregation size, when I actually spoke to that church on Sunday, was about 10, 12 people. And so we had maybe 20 people that night. And so, I'm kind of sitting, and Bishop is teaching, and I'm looking at everybody. And it comes time to pray for people. And so we get up, that's what we do, is we get up and we kind of make spots for people to come to, not kind of like lines and stuff. So I'm standing there, and this guy comes up. That's totally fine. That pretty much freaked me out. Really? I couldn't know how somebody had to have success with it. Because I instinctively knew, and then I would think, I won't argue the point with someone, but I knew that he wasn't going to be. And I wanted to have some success. But, I was looking for a headache. But so can you imagine, here this is. And I think that the apostles were a little bit like me. They're all sitting around, here comes all these people that are blind, deaf, lame, crippled. And I love this one word here. It's just like this is like a tremendous word that if you're not careful, you run over it and you totally miss it. It says, and a large crowd came to him, bringing with them those who were lame. Well, there you go. Crippled. I thought if he was lame, he was pretty crippled, so I guess there's a difference between lame and crippled. One is worse than the other, maybe. If this isn't getting good, it's getting worse. Blind. Oh, well. There you go. Mute. Here's the word. Many others. What is others? You've already got blind, lame, mute. Now there's others. So that's pretty much takes it all. So it's like the sickest of the sick, the worst of the worst, are gathered here. It says that Jesus healed them. So he just healed them. So the disciples, again, as one of the disciples, I'd be so pumped at this. I'd be like so stoked. I'd be so fired up about it. Have you ever seen anybody healed of anything? Have you ever prayed for anybody that's been healed of anything? I've never prayed for someone who's got healed of blindness, or lameness, or crippleness, or muteness. I've prayed for people who had others. I've prayed for others that I've seen healed. And when you pray for somebody that's healed of a headache, it fires you. If you pray for someone that's having severe shoulder trouble, and they go, wow, my shoulder's fine, you get kind of charged up about that. You're excited now. You're good. You got it. You're ready for it. What we find in the story is that then all this gets over with, and Jesus says, guys, come here. We need to keep this. You would think that they would be like so pumped. That they go, oh man, this is going to be cool. Watch what happens now. This is going to be awesome and stuff, right? But instead, they say, well, this is a desolate place. There's no place to get food. And so Jesus asked them the question, well, what do you got? What do you got? Give me what you got. Now, the most amazing thing about this is here these disciples are. They're questioning. And when you read this, you get that feeling that they're just like going like, oh, no. What are we going to do? You know, what's he going to do? And they got to, you know, because they went from this one place and he's healing all these people, but that doesn't seem to work for them. They don't seem to have confidence. They're not speaking with confidence. They're not acting with confidence. I mean, you would have thought they said, man, Jesus, we got like 7 loaves of bread that you're going to like do this thing with, and it's going to be so cool and so awesome, and we got a couple of fish to go with us, so this is going to be like a banquet in heaven, right? Because you just healed all these hundreds and hundreds of people. So there's 4,000 people at this event, men, plus women and children. You're talking about 10,000 people. And all this is going on. But now the disciples are more like me. They're going like, got these 7 little loaves of bread. These little bitty small fish. And what's amazing about this story here is that just a few chapters before, they fed the 5,000. They had seen this miracle take place. They had participated in it before with even less bread and less fish. And they had seen what Jesus could do. But yet they still was kind of in this place of life, not having confidence to do who he was. So, for me, putting myself in that place, and actually, so many times the Lord has put me in this same very place of having to realize and having to learn the lesson. And this is a lesson that we learn over and over and over again as Christians. This is one of those lessons that until you get extremely mature, I mean extremely, 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 extremely mature, you will learn this lesson again. And that is that He is sufficient. He brings us to the impossible and other for us to experience in the miraculous. Occasionally in my life I've been like really in a good place spiritually. And it's like what I call, I have my spiritual moments. And I'm like really spiritual. Like talk spiritual, act spiritual, think spiritual. And one of those great moments for me was the time in my life when I broke my back. I didn't have the insurance. I didn't have the job I was working paid minimum. It was a construction job that I took just to try to, because I had shut down a little business I had. I was in debt. So I fell off a building into a concrete driveway. Crushed 3 vertebrae. Was told that basically don't move. That was funny. Like, we're gonna send you home, but don't move. I was probably 28 years old or so. But I realized that I had no hope. I couldn't work. There was no way I could work. I wasn't sure that the guy I worked for, if he even had workers' comp. I already had a large medical bill that was on the payment. And so, I said, what am I going to do? I have a small house payment, a car payment, bills, and no way to pay. And for one of the few times in my life, my heart rejoiced in that moment because I realized that I was going to see something. Because otherwise I was done. I mean, I'd just be totally done. And that's a good place to be. That's where God really wants us to live. Is that a hopeless situation that you would see as hopeless, or that I would see as hopeless for you, that you would see it as the opportunity. One of the greatest author, writer, influences in my life is a man by he was in England. But anyway, he's famous for having started open house. At one time, at the height of the ministry, they was feeding 10,000 children, multiple houses. George Mueller, you know how he did that? The reason that he did that, the bottom line, the first reason that he did it, there was multiple reasons, like kids were starving. This is England during the day. This is during the time when the kids were just cut out of school and they were put in sweatshops, abused, and worked to death. So there's lots of reasons, but the main reason, the reason that got that started him on that road, was to prove God. He began this journey in his life to prove God. To prove God is sufficient, that God is sovereign, and that God is always, always, always. And so I read his life story, and there's one book out, and I don't know how to take it, but it is. There's one book that's easier to read, and there's one book that's like, oh my gosh. Because it was written in the 1800s. It's written in the style of an 1800 writer, so it's really, very wooden. He used words that were not familiar with. But there's so many miracles in George Mueller's life, but he became so known. He wasn't a Pentecostal charismatic guy. Wow, he was in the movement that he was associated with, called the Brotherhood. George Mueller just believed that God was sufficient. So one of the things he did in this ministry that was such made it so remarkable is he never asked for money. He never made the needs of the ministry known to anyone that had any possibility of being able to meet that need. He wouldn't even ask for people to pray for him if there's any chance that they could possibly try to do it. 10,000. But George Mueller didn't start out with 10,000 pounds. Where he started out was in the time of England. At that time, you had what you call pew rentals. You rented your pew. And that's how they financed their churches, and that's how the preachers made their living. You rented a pew. George Mueller and this other man made this decision that they would live in faith, that they would trust God and believe God and prove God to be faithful. So they many times they were brought to the absolute complete end with no possible way. Except God is the God of the impossible. My situation that I was telling you about, I don't know how God did that, but I survived that. I was able to make that found out that I think it was pretty illegal what the guys did that I worked for, but they somehow got me covered under workman's comp. So I had a little workman's comp, kept a check in there, that wasn't even enough to pay my house payment. But somehow, money stretched. Now, I didn't have a miraculous thing, someone walk up and write a $1,000 check or do anything like that. It was just somehow, it was out there. I always had enough money, not an abundance of money, but enough money. There's been other times in my life when it's been that way, and I've been able to recognize that what God's doing is that God is trying to bring me to the end of myself. But you see, it's only when you've brought to the end of yourself that you truly can see God. As long as you're mixed in it, as long as you're meddling, it just doesn't ever quite work well. It always messes up. It's always like I was talking about my ability to speak and someone hear something. As long as I was trying to do it so hard and trying to be so perfect, it was terrible and it was horrible. But it's when I've learned to just let go and just give God the little I got. It's not when it comes to preaching and teaching and that kind of stuff. It's not much, but it's all. That's my 7 loaves. Few loaves of bread. 7 loaves of bread. That's all God has. See, he doesn't want he doesn't want you to do it. That's amazing. He wants you to be involved. But he doesn't want you to be the one who does it. He wants it always to be a very obvious thing that he did it and you was along the way. And so this is a story when you think about they saw a greater miracle. Go back and read that. I believe it was 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish in that instance. 3 loaves of bread. I should have went back and read that. I never know about that. I should have been paragraph 1, what it header and all that stuff. 8. Anyway, in Matthew, he fed 5,000 with less. And they had done that. But they hadn't got it yet. And see, that's the other thing. You see, Jesus, the Lord, does not expect us to get it. He has very, does not have that high expectations. That's why we're called sheep. We're not called rocks. Because the Lord knows that it takes a while. It takes experience over and over and over and over. So really, as a Christian, unless you're just being like crazy, I'm not telling you that you can be crazy, okay? It's not. It's one of those things that Paul talks about in Romans about sin and grace. No, you don't go sin because you got grace. Right? Or you don't do stupid things because God is going to cover you. You do the best you can do, asking him for wisdom all the time, looking to him at every moment, but rejoicing in the impossibilities that come into your life, whatever they are. Sometimes they're health. Sometimes it's financial. I've experienced that. Sometimes it's just whatever it is so unique to each one of us. That brings us to the end of who we are and to who he is. But it's just like the bishop has been teaching for so long. This whole Christian thing, all of it, there's so much of it, it really comes down to speaks of that so eloquently in Romans and Colossians and Galatians about Christ in I've done it. I'm the only one who has Christ in us. One of my kind of life verses is the one of Lewis in the Colossians. It's just tagged on at the end of another series of verses, but it says that and what it's speaking about is the mystery of God. And Paul's talking about the mystery of Christ, the mystery of God. And he comes to this place and says, this is what the mystery is. Christ in you. That's really all it's all about. That's really what everything that we're involved in, everything that we kind of do as we kind of wander along through this world, is trying to bring us to that realization that it's Christ in us. And that we can have that confidence. It's scary sometimes. I'm not going to lie to you about that. It can get really scary. You're laying in a hospital with 3 foot vertebrae and you don't know how you're going to pay rent. That's scary. Don't even know if you're going to be able to walk enough to go back to work. And I had other broke lungs to go along with. But so it can be scary. But he's always sufficient. He's always sovereign in our lives and everything that comes along. Nothing ever happens, no disaster of any kind. Nothing that we do that creates for him surprises him. And he is so good. You see, the thing about God that we really struggle the most with is this love. Is this unimaginable love? How can God possibly love someone like me? I wish I had enough. said, I'm too aware. As long as we have hopes other than Christ, then we will always have to be there. Because He wants us to get there. Get there. Because we are helpless without us. Every situation, no matter what the situation is, that we all can get with us. So another quick story, and I'll close this out. Again, I was in my early 20s and in this ministry, counseling with different people, drug addicts, alcoholics, Satanists, and all kinds of people like that. And I'd come to this place where I was like, God, really? I'm just an old surfer, hippie dude that just has done way too much LSD, smoked way too much pot, and trying to deal with problems like Satanists. Stuff like that. So I was really just in that place where there just seemed to be a lot of that. Off and on. And so I was sitting in a room with a young man and his partner. They weren't married. And we had talked with this couple many times, and they were trying to be Christians and working hard at it. But they had a lot of failure. And so I'm sitting in this room, and the woman starts telling me about how they live. And they live the life of fear. Because the man had been involved in Satan's. And so she starts telling me how she would wake up at night and he would be standing over her, chanting chants and with a mom. How he had done blood sacrifices of animals and they participated in satanic rituals and stuff. I was at an end. I was at an end before that. And I was really out of there. I did what I do best. Is I just kept my mouth shut. I don't know. Something. But I was at such a hopeless place in this situation. Because I love this guy. Because I'd actually been the one who picked him up hitchhiking with him initially. And I just saw this helplessness in the situation. What do you do? And the guy's agreeing to all of this stuff. And he's telling his stories about how, he wakes up and he's over his wife and he's fixing to stab her and how things possessing him. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So I just started crying out to the Lord. I said, Lord, what are you doing? What am I doing? Well, nothing. So I was just praying and crying out to God. At an end, I was hopeless in this situation. I didn't have a single word to tell this one. I mean, if I'd have said something super spiritual like, Jesus loves you, I think I might have died. From the sheer stupidity of that statement in that moment. See, they need something far greater than the mere word of Jesus loves you. And I knew that. I knew I had nothing. And I was telling the Lord about all the nothingness. And all of a sudden, I hear this. I open my eyes and look over. And this young man and his wife, partner, on their knees, crying. Work something in the back. The name of my church. Well, I didn't beat the kids out. Sorry. I talked so much about that, but that's my life. Welcome to it.